The interesting thing is that really their relationship and our church's relationship developed a lot more with the family, with his family, than with the woman who'd been attacked, because I think for them it was a really surprising thing of here are people coming to love us when everyone else seems to be angry at us and judging us.
Welcome to the We Collide podcast. We're a growing community of everyday chicks colliding with Jesus in our mess, our pain, our joy, and our stories. We value showing up as we truly are, so that's what you'll find here. Walls and masks being torn down so that we can allow Jesus to meet us where we truly are and hear about other women doing the same. We can't wait to collide with you. Welcome to the We Collide podcast. I'm Willow Weston, the founder and director of Collide, and I'm so excited to have Pastor Kurt Ingram on today. Kurt is a friend of mine, and he also pastors a local congregation in our town called Roosevelt Community Church. And the thing I love about Kurt is that he practices what he preaches. He's a man who lives the message. And Kurt has a beautiful, strong, amazing, talented wife named Carol and two amazing kids. And he has served on Young Life staff. He's been a pastor in Philadelphia. He's lived in the jungle of Peru. And he's super duper tall, but even bigger is his heart for the marginalized, the forgotten, and those whose voice is not heard. Kurt deeply thinks about Jesus and what it looks like to live a life like him. And I believe Kurt will challenge us, stretch us, and make us think long and hard about who we're called to be in light of who we say we follow. So Kurt, thank you for being on the podcast.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's going to be fun. The past few weeks, I think I've mentioned this to you, but we've been talking on the podcast about this deep sense of loneliness that we often feel and kind of the sense that no one's with us. But at the same time, we've been talking about this God with us, this Emmanuel that we celebrate, especially at Christmas time. And so I just wanted to start by asking you, what strikes you about the idea of a God with us?
Yeah, I think especially at Christmas, you know, it is a word that we talk about, like, this is who Jesus is, the God with us. And if you remember the story of the Old Testament, I mean, people are feeling like, is God here? Like, has God abandoned us? Like, we thought we were going to enter the promised land. We thought that we were God's chosen people. And here we are. We've come out of exile, but we're still being oppressed by the Romans. There are soldiers all around. You know, we're kind of like second-class citizens. And it feels like that God isn't with us. And so really when the Old Testament talks about Emmanuel and calls Jesus Emmanuel, it's not triumphant. It's not, oh yes, God is on our side. It's actually a cry out of like, God, are you with us? When we talk about this. But when I think it's so important, I look at all the things happening in our world right now. And I think of, you know, like as you talked about loneliness and some people in my own community who I know are struggling right now with depression and loneliness and pain. Who that's kind of their constant question. Is anyone with me? Is God with me? And for us, Advent is the season we're in right now, leading up to Christmas. And Christmas, we celebrate like it's the dawn breaking. Like it really is the moment where there's this great awakening that, no, God is with us. Not just with me, not just with the people who are like me, but God is really with us and with all of humanity and with all who suffer. That it's substantially different to know that someone is on your side. And I think that's some of the loneliness that people experience is feeling like no one understands me. No one's on my side. It feels like the world is against me. And so this is a really radical truth that, no, God is with you. Like the creator of all things, the savior of the world, the God of the universe, that he is with you. He's for you. He's on your side. He's here.
I love your question. Is God here? Mm-hmm. That just feels like a question that, when you talk about the state our world is in, when you even talk about individuals at your church and, you know, people I know, I think that is kind of this heart cry of, is God here?
Yeah.
That's a question that in a sense, Jesus with his life and his death sort of answered.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And I think of, you know, this past week, there was, regardless of your politics, there are people who are sitting at the border who are trying to escape violence and trying to find a new home. And they think the U.S. might be the answer to that. But they're sitting there and feeling like there's a whole nation that's against them. And there's been a group of a couple hundred pastors. I have some friends in Southern California who have been involved, who've actually gone to be with them. to show up and they share a table and they eat together and provided stuff and they take communion together. And essentially they're going to people who they know feel like right now in this moment, for a whole bunch of political and other reasons, are being spotlighted and feeling especially like the world is against us. Mm. Like our home where we're leaving, there's so much violence. There's so much that we can't go back. There's no hope there. And this place where they thought was hope, they're feeling like this place is saying, you're not welcome. There's no hope here either. Mm-hmm. And there's some people motivated by Jesus who are saying, no, we will stand with you. Mm-hmm. And I know that that is so powerful for them to experience, and not just, hey, we're going to vote for you or we're going to put up some Facebook meme about you. But no, we're going to come. We're going to show up. We're going to share a meal. But we're going to provide medical care or sleeping bags. Like we don't have answers. We can't solve this, but we're here with you. We're on your side. And to me, that's a really, really powerful thing for people to show up. You know, like I think of how many points in my life I've felt lonely or destroyed or, man, it feels like I'm fighting against the world and like life isn't working. Like things aren't working. I think of a point in my wife and I's life where we almost lost our house and we didn't have money to pay for our mortgage. And I had lost a job and I was in school and we were trying to sort things out. And there were so many moments that were like, we don't know if this story is going to turn out well. Like it feels like we're all alone and no one is on our side and we can't sort this out. Mm-hmm. You know, and obviously I'm here, so things changed. Mm-hmm. And I think that God throughout that kept reminding both my wife, Carol, and I know God, I'm with you. Like, and that doesn't mean you're going to get everything you want or you're just going to be rescued out of suffering, but you need to know that I am here with you and I am for you and I'm in this with you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I'm wondering, as I've been thinking about this, how much or how important is it as followers of Jesus, who we call him Emmanuel, God with us, how much of our call is to be those people, to come alongside other people and be with them?
Yeah. Yeah. John, in one of his letters in the New Testament, he talks about that. And he says, if our life doesn't look like the life of Jesus in some way, like if people don't experience us the way they would experience Jesus in some way, that we're lying about our faith. I mean, John, when he writes, is pretty radical in that, but that we're lying about it, that there's this real idea of, no, if we're going to follow Christ, then it actually means like with our feet and hands and the way we live, like we're meant to follow Jesus. John, in the beginning of his gospel, said that when Jesus came, it was that the word became flesh. The word was made flesh, that God moved into the neighborhood. Mm-hmm. And for me, when I think about, well, if we're trying to follow Jesus and look like Jesus, then somehow we ought to be the word of God being made flesh, the word of love, the word of generosity, the word of grace. And I think at Emmanuel, at Christmas time, when we think of this name that Jesus has and this role he plays in the story of our world, that God is with us, I do think that we are invited to follow Jesus so that the world would experience us being that word made flesh, that the world would experience through us that, no, like God is for us. God wants us to know freedom, wants us to know forgiveness. It comes through repentance. It comes through struggle. It comes through other stuff. But that really is God's desire because God is for us. And I think of so many people who have somehow got the message from Christians and churches and other things that God is against them. Mm-hmm. Like I think my own story as a child, the type of faith that I was given at a point where the way I understood it was that God really hated you and was against you until you put your faith in him. And all of a sudden, then God loved you. Hmm. But that's not the story of Emmanuel. God doesn't come to a world that already loved him, was already obedient, was all good. Like Jesus enters a world that's really straying away and is lost and is broken. And throughout Jesus' life, we hear him say over and over again, like, you've heard it said, but I say, like, correcting. No, like, you guys have misunderstood. And so Jesus doesn't just love those who are already good or already all right or already kind of in the fold or in the family. Like, God with us really is a thing of no, God is with you no matter what. And I think too many of my neighbors, too many people who live on the margins, somehow have got the message that actually God isn't for you, that God actually kind of hates you. And I think the way we're called to follow Jesus is somehow with our lives and the way we relate to people and the way that we view reconciliation and peace and joy and the way we view all the hard things in our life and the good things, that somehow we're speaking, no, to our neighbors and neighborhoods, no, God is with you. And God really wants you to be a part of the family. There's this welcome that's a part of the nature of God that is always inviting everyone because God is for us.
Mm-hmm. How do you feel like we're not getting this right?
That's a long list.
Right.
I mean, I think really some of it is about power, that we're not getting it right because we think that it's about us getting a bigger club or having the right answers or the exact stuff or trying to get people to look a certain way, and that if we look a certain way or if we think a certain way, that's what God really is looking for. But we've always done that from a broken place. You know, this is the story of the beginning of Genesis, is there's this curse. Like, everything was perfect and good. There was peace. And then we as humanity decided to rebel against God. And because of that, evil and death and desolation and destruction entered our world. And I think too often we've tried to just live within that curse rather than saying, no, we're part of another kingdom. And so if we're part of another kingdom, then it invites us to say, no, there really is radical love and radical grace and radical welcome. Mm-hmm. But the kingdoms of our world and our empire is very clear that there are boundaries of who's in and who's out, of who's a citizen and who's not, of who's rich and who's poor, or who's black and who's white, that we have all of these things that separate us. And I think that the church has fallen into that in some ways and has not found a strong ability to live into this radical truth that, no, the way of Jesus is totally different than that. The way of Jesus really is an offering of welcome and invitation to everyone, regardless of anything. And it's an invitation to come and to repent, to turn away from those things in our world that are evil, that cause death and desolation and destruction, and to turn to the way of God and the kingdom of God. And I think we've kind of missed that this is really a radical welcome being offered to the whole world.
Hmm. I love that. Radical love, radical grace, yeah, and radical welcome. How do you think we're setting up our lives to not be with certain types of people?
You know, when I was in Philadelphia, I was a youth pastor there. I would take my high schoolers on mission trips into the city. And one time there was a girl while we were out there in the streets hanging out with people in North Philly. And she made this observation of, you know, like in our world and, you know, in kind of her white middle upper class world, we have garages. So we get up in the morning, we get in our car by ourselves or with one other person, we go where we're going to school or to work or whatever, we get out of the car, we go in, most of us work or study or whatever in cubicles, there's not a ton of relationship, we buy things at drive-thrus, we go real quick to the grocery store, try not to talk to anyone, we get back in our car and we go back home, mm-hmm, and in that way we've totally isolated ourselves from the rest of the world. Mm-hmm. So something I've been thinking a lot about recently as a pastor and as I'm someone who really cares about our neighborhood is this idea of where are the places where we linger. So I think part of God with us, there's this idea of lingering that I've been thinking about, of where are those places where we find ourselves not in a hurry, not intentionally doing anything, mm-hmm, but really we have the space to just sit and talk and interact with other people. So like for me, my gym, I work out at a CrossFit gym, and you're laughing. So does Willow.
Oh yeah, I'm so cool.
But there's a time before the workout and after the workout, it's like an hour long class, where you see people that are just like laying on the ground or stretching and they're just talking, they're lingering. Mm-hmm. And there's something about that that's really beautiful. And you see them being with each other in a very different way than if they went out to dinner or went to do something together. Like, it's just empty space where they're together. Sometimes we see that in other places. Like, like when you're walking, if you go walking on a trail and there's other people just walking, not exercising, but just out for a walk. Mm-hmm. Like, there's something about the space they're holding that's very different. And it's like they're lingering. At a coffee shop or at a bar, like if you go to a brewery and you're having a beer and, you know, like people are just there lingering and you have open conversation with people, mm-hmm, because there's this empty space that we've created where we're with other people and there's no agenda and it's open and there's relationship. And I think too much of our life is so organized, so purposeful, so busy, mm-hmm, that we don't have enough places where we linger. And I think that that's a lot of the space where we feel like someone is just with us, mm-hmm, because they don't have an agenda. They're not there to do something or to get something from me or to produce anything. Like, there's just space that we're sharing together, being present, open to relationship, or open to sit and be quiet, or open to whatever. And so I have been thinking a lot about how do we find ourselves in more spaces where we're able to linger, where we really could be with each other in kind of an unintentional, beautiful way that's open to whatever might happen.
Mm-hmm. Did God send you here to totally challenge me?
No, you sit in coffee shops all day. You linger all the time.
No. I was just thinking, like, years ago when Rob and I were first married, so we were about to hit our 20-year anniversary, but we were, you know, we bought our first house, and I was in ministry and young married couple, and we were those people with the garage door, and you open the garage door, you wave to your neighbors, you leave, and, like, every night we're at church functions. Because I worked at a church, so I was like, you know, whether I was leading youth group or leading a Bible study or in a Bible study or at a service or whatever. And I remember having this moment where I found out that our neighbor lady died. The one I waved to when I was backing out of my garage. She fell down the stairs and she broke her neck. And I felt so sad that I hadn't taken the time to get to know my neighbor.
Mm-hmm.
And she died.
Yeah.
I mean, I knew her name, I knew her son's name, and I waved to them, but I was so busy doing this kind of like Christian church life. And that was very convicting for me, this idea of living like Jesus and lingering and being with people. And yeah, I was so busy inside the church walls, I didn't know anybody outside of those. And we ended up moving, and I got pregnant with our first kid, and I left, you know, vocational ministry, and I became a stay-at-home mom. And for me, that was like a total like identity turnaround of like, well, who am I and what do I do every day? Because I wasn't a woman who, you know, grew up saying, oh, I always wanted to be a stay-at-home mom. But I chose to be a stay-at-home mom. And when I was, I would go to the grocery store all the time, and I got to know my checker. And it turns out she was a kid who used to come to that youth group when I was living that really like church infiltrated life every night of the week. But she would just come sometimes with her Christian friend. She wasn't a Christian. And really, when I got the opportunity to, if you will, do ministry, air quotes, in her life, was going through her line at the grocery store.
Yeah.
And I purposely chose to go through her line to get to know her and to talk to her. And we got to know each other. And she found herself in a crisis at one point. And she, you know, she was a lesbian woman and her girlfriend had broken up with her, and she was suicidal, and she called me and I met her in a coffee shop. And long story short, she ended up moving in to our house and living with our family and getting to know her and having her as a part of our life was an unexpected blessing for us. But it was such a turnaround from the life of pulling out of the driveway and going to church every night and coming back and waving at a neighbor who dies and I don't know her, you know? So I think that question of, you know, where do you linger? The reason why I joke that you're challenging me is I feel like I'm so busy. I haven't left a margin in my life to linger. And I'm sure there's a lot of people listening to this who can completely resonate with that question.
Yeah.
Is hard to answer.
Yeah,
because I don't linger after CrossFit, although that's like paying for hell. So I try to get out of there as fast as possible.
Yeah, no, but I think of like the supermarket's a good thought too. You know, my friend Colin and I, at one point, we were doing a Bible study and talking about how when you stand in line at the supermarket and you look around, everyone's on their phone. Mm-hmm. And so we challenge each other, like, because him and I both love food and we love to grocery shop. My wife hates it. I love it. So I'm the one who grocery shops a lot. Make sure your phone is not out at the grocery store.
Mm-hmm.
And to actually create that space of like, and start conversations with the people in front of you and behind you and with the checker. And that really is the moment that people are open to relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And there are also moments where people aren't, but that really is the moment where people are open to have conversations. And it may not end up with someone living in your basement, but like it really does. Over time, especially when you see kind of the same people in the same place, it begins to build something different where it feels like we're not just people shopping. We are a community.
Mm-hmm.
Or like I do think for sporting stuff, it's another opportunity I have to linger is I coach football. And after football practice, people just sit around and talk.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's a very natural. There's no outcome. There's not something we're trying to do. It's just this space where the people who are there have a tendency to just hang out and talk. It's a space where people linger. And I think the more we can show up a little early and stay a little late, if you go to a church or you're part of a community, I think that's important too. Like I know a lot of people who show up a few minutes late to church and leave right away or to whatever their kind of community is where they're gathering and trying to figure out Jesus. Like, and they miss out on this lingering space But the problem is that then our faith and our way of being Christians becomes all like a product and not relationship. That we really have to, where are these spaces where we are interested, we're entering a process of knowing people, of being with the way God is with us without a predetermined outcome. Mm-hmm. That we're not doing this to get anything out of it. We're not doing this for any reason other than it's good for us to be with each other. Mm-hmm. The way that God said is good for me to be with you. Mm-hmm. That's very clear. You know, last Sunday we talked about John the Baptist's father, Zechariah, sings this kind of prophecy over him after he's named John in Luke 1. And there's my favorite verse in there is that because of God's tender mercy, the dawn is about to break on those who sit in darkness and in the shadow of death. And for me, that's this really powerful thing of why did God come with us? It really comes out of this deep-rooted, because of his tender mercy. Mm-hmm. Like because God loves, he showed up. Mm-hmm. And I think the reason if we ask each other, well, why do you do that? Why do you go to church or why do you go shopping or why do you go with those people or do, you know, all of those, well, why are we doing that? I think very rarely is our answer, well, because we have this kind of tender mercy and love for the people around us that we might encounter. Mm-hmm. And I think if we talk about, well, how do we follow Jesus? Well, we have to be rooted in that same tender mercy, that same love that God has for our world that pushes us into places, being with people who are different than us and being able to create space to linger together and be with them. Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I did a little research on the word with. Mm-hmm. Here's a little grammar lesson. You already know this because you're a smart guy, but prepositions show how a noun is related to another word. So God with us, the word with is connecting God to us. And there's so many reasons why a lot of people don't want to be connected to Jesus. Yeah. And I find most of them are due to his followers' inability to be with people.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering, what do you make of that?
Yeah, and I would say, you know, it is interesting. I think we live in a time where people have more and more thought through of how do I want to be connected to this? How do I want to be connected to the word evangelical? So I have lots of great friends who love Jesus, who really own that word evangelical, are very proud of it and proud that that means that we are following Jesus and inviting the world to follow Jesus. I have a lot of friends who have completely distanced themselves and said, I don't want my with. I don't want to be connected to that word. And I think sometimes when people don't want to be connected with God, the idea they have about God isn't who God really is. Mm-hmm. I think actually probably more true than anything is I think there's a lot of us who have been Christians or who are Christians who show up at churches that we don't actually want to be connected with the real Jesus in the Gospels. The Jesus who gave up everything, the Jesus who hung out with prostitutes, the Jesus who was accused of disrupting everything and hanging out with sinners too much, the Jesus who was sitting at a well talking to a woman in a place he never should have been and having a conversation he shouldn't have ever had. Like we don't actually want to be associated with the radical Jesus who invites us to love our enemies, that says, no, there's no proper response when we get hurt or when something bad happens other than to love those people. There's no justification for us to hate. Mm-hmm. There's no justification for us to want revenge. Like the really radical Jesus, I think there's some who don't want to be connected with God or with Jesus because of a sense of a judgmental God or a sense of a God who his name keeps being associated with things like racism. And we look back through our own history as a nation or genocide or hatred or judgment. Like, there's this way in which God has been associated with a lot of really negative things throughout our history, particularly in America and where we sit. But there are also those who don't want to be associated with the real Jesus and the real gospel because his love is so radical that that would be really uncomfortable and actually runs counter to the story of much of particularly the white evangelical church in America.
Right. So what I'm thinking about though is the less Christ followers say yes to the radical call to live like him, mm-hmm. to go love, as you say, the prostitutes and the, you know, the woman at the well and the woman caught in the act of adultery and right. Yeah. But in our life, right. The less we carry out that radical call to be like Jesus, the less those people want to be connected with him.
Right.
You know what I mean? Right. Like God can use our coming alongside and being with people.
Yeah.
to remind them of his presence.
Right.
And the more that we make these kind of like, we set up our lives where we don't want to be with certain kind of people, the more we're busy, the more we don't have margin, the more we're not kind of lingering with people, or we have these lines we've drawn where we'll be with certain kinds of people, but not with other kinds of people, or we're spending all our time inside church walls.
Mm-hmm.
The more we do all those things, the less these people will buy into the idea that God is with them, because God's people certainly aren't.
Yeah. One, I think even that, you know, the it's not God with them, it's not God with me, it's God with us. Mm-hmm. So that's the other thing I think we have to reclaim is who is the us? Because it is connecting God with us. So it's not just God with me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think that that is a danger one, but it's really God with us. Of we have to realize that it's not us and them, it's us. It's humanity, it's all of us. And the more that we realize that we're connected, I think the more that it makes us want to figure out, well, what does it look like for us to be this us that is connected with God? But I do think, I think there's a lot of people who see Jesus as like this religious person. So like when we think of that, we think of pastor or priest or, you know, in our context as Christians,
mm-hmm.
That there's this idea of what a pastor or a priest is. And we think of all the ways that people have misused that. I think of the people that I picture standing behind a pulpit, dressed really nice, speaking a different way. I think of all the stories of abuse, of violence. I think of all of these things that kind of characteristic picture of a religious leader. And there are people, I think, who don't want to be with that vision of what Jesus was like. But that's not who Jesus was. And so I think part of why people have disconnected, well, that width of God with us,
mm-hmm.
is again because they've misunderstood who Jesus is, and that we've got to keep going back to the Gospels and keep reading them and seeing, no, who did Jesus actually hang out with? What did he actually say? What kind of person was he? How was he with people? Like, well, what is this process? Like, I think of the woman at the well, and how did Jesus end up in that situation? Like, he was God on earth. Didn't he have other things to do? Shouldn't he have been teaching or writing or in the temple or doing something holy or spiritual? What's he doing in the middle of the day just sitting doing nothing?
Mm-hmm.
In a place he probably shouldn't have been, talking to some woman he probably shouldn't have been talking about. Why was he lingering there?
Mm-hmm.
Like, he shouldn't have been. Like, he had other things to do. And I just think that we have so misunderstood what it is. And this is the radical nature of Christmas, is that, you know, Advent is a season where we really lean into the darkness and the grief, and we try to speak as much truth as we can about what is wrong with our world, because we really want to long together. Advent means coming, and so we celebrate the coming of the Messiah in the Christmas story, but as Christians full of hope, we long for the coming of Jesus again, because we look realistically at, no, the world is really broken. There's a lot of hurting people. Addiction is very real. All of us have so much a sexual brokenness. All of us have so much pain. And we talk about some people who are extremely lonely, but I think the loneliness is a plague on all of us right now, that our culture has really done a lot of damage in that way. And so Christmas really is supposed to be like this light breaking through the darkness. And I think that too many people don't want to think about being connected with Jesus because they don't see Jesus as really the light breaking into the darkness.
Mm-hmm.
Then no, really, if Jesus were here, he would be challenging all that's wrong.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he would be standing with those who are part of the Me Too movement. He would be standing with those who are trying to do prison reform and looking at the prison industrial complex and what that is in America. Jesus would be standing with those who are fighting for the life and the rights and to be more hospitable to people coming to our countries from other places. Like, Jesus would be standing with addicts out on our streets with the homeless. Like, Jesus wouldn't be in these places of power. And many of our churches, which are so nice and comfortable and are great places, like, really the Jesus in the New Testament that we actually read about would be in places that, to be honest, many of us don't want to go because they're really uncomfortable. But that's because this story is about light going to dark places.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that is almost too dangerous of a story for many of us to accept.
I love the idea that Christmas is about light breaking through the darkness. And I think that's a huge challenge that all of us can be at this Christmas, but beyond, with our whole lives. Like, what does it look like for me to be light breaking through the dark places in my life, in my world, with my family, in my neighborhood, in my community? Mm-hmm. And then when I think about that, that requires something of me. That requires something of us then.
Right.
It requires sacrifice, I think. It requires bravery to step into places you're afraid to step into. I mean, what's it required for you?
I mean, I think one thing it requires too is for us to recognize there are other people sitting in this darkness and they don't even know the dawn is coming. Like, it requires us to hear their stories and listen. I think too often I live at a very surface level, not really understanding. You know, we're inundated with news and other stuff about all of the violence in our world, all of the hatred and racism and fear. We're inundated with these things, but I don't think I do a good enough job of listening to actual people who are in the midst of that, who are crying out. And I think when we realize that, no, we are sitting in this moment where it's very dark, but we are a people of hope and courage, and that we believe the dawn is coming, I think it starts from a place of how do I listen to people who really are feeling that darkness? And it's uncomfortable, and I don't really want to do it. But that's what I think Jesus is calling us into, is like, if we believe that light is going to break through into the darkness, I think the starting place is awakening to the darkness, which sounds a little counterintuitive. And I think as Christians, we want to jump to the light. We want to jump to Christmas morning. But the whole point of like all of our Christmas traditions around Santa Claus and gifts is this delayed gratification and anticipation that we know we are full of hope and stuff, and that we do wait. Like, you wait till Christmas morning, you wait, but you wait with this sense of hope. And I think that I think of many kids that I've worked with through Salvation Army camps and in Young Life and other things who have sat in places where they weren't going to get anything on Christmas. In fact, Christmas with their families and addiction and other issues they were facing was not a good morning, was not something to look forward to. And I think, how do we hear those stories, and how do we stand with them, and how do we walk with them in that and remind them, no, there really is hope. And for me, the hardest thing is, how do I keep believing in hope in situations where I can't see the hope? You know, like we have homeless neighbors who live around our church. And I don't know what the hope really is for them. I don't know what the end, like, I have this, you know, I'm middle class. I have this life and this idea of what thriving in our world looks like. But for them with their PTSD and with struggling with addiction and with other things they have in their life, what does it look like for them to thrive? And sometimes that's hard for me. Recently, I got to go to Colombia and spend some time with some people who are doing some work around the idea of peace in a place that has experienced a lot of violence. And they were kind of asking, well, why is it important for us to hear stories from other places? The people who run that camp run a camp. It's called Building Leaders for Peace. They run a camp on the Turkey-Syria border. And so they're trying to bring these stories out. But the truth is that we need imagination. Like, as people of hope, we need imagination, because imagination is what feeds hope. And hope is what gives us courage to actually act like it's day before it's day. And like, hope gives us courage to follow Jesus and try to live out the kingdom now while the kingdom isn't fully here. It gives us courage to look at Genesis 3 and be like, no, here's kind of sin and the curse that came, but that's not the story I have to live in. I don't have to live in the story of the curse. I can live another story. I don't have to hate my enemy. I can love my enemy. Like, I can live another story, but in order to have the courage to live into that, I have to have hope. And in order to have hope, I have to have some kind of imagination of what the dawn looks like. You know, like, if you were someone who had never experienced light, never experienced the dawn, like, you just wouldn't even know what the gift of that could be. For many people, you know, like, we who haven't ever experienced freedom or personal peace. I mean, I think that idea of what does it look like to be content? I think that's a real struggle, and Christmas, I think, brings that out in all of its consumerism of what does it look like to be content? And it's a great idea to say, oh man, contentment is so nice, but if you have no idea what it feels like, it's hard to actually have any kind of courage to do the kind of work or live into the kind of life, because you have this hope that, no, I could be content. Mm-hmm. And so we have all this discontentment. We have all of these people wrestling in darkness, and I don't think we have enough stories being told that stoke our imagination to give us hope that would help us to have the courage to live differently.
There's so much good stuff here. I'm dying. I have so much I want to say to you. How far do I want to go back? You said that entering or awakening to the darkness feels counterintuitive, mm-hmm. but it's not counterintuitive to who Jesus is. And you right. know that, but yeah. I think it's worth saying, like, when you said that, I recall Jesus getting out of the boat and showing up in the tombs with the guy who's cutting himself and he's crying out and he's been isolated from his community. Mm-hmm. And Jesus didn't send a boat over and say, go pick up that guy and bring him into my light. Like yeah. Jesus showed up in the tombs where no good Jewish rabbi yeah. would show up because it would make them unclean mm-hmm. to be around all these dead bodies. And he stood in his presence and the guy ends up right. He's in his right mind and Jesus sends him back into community. But I feel like entering the darkness is what Jesus does. And the thing about that story that shakes me every single time I read it is that boat was the boat that was in the storm.
Yeah.
And Jesus is with his disciples before he gets to the cemetery mm-hmm. to enter into the darkness of the sky. That they're on this boat. There's this huge storm that takes over and the disciples are peeing their pants, right? Yeah. And they're calling out for Jesus
yeah.
and he's taking a nap, yeah. right? So they're ticked and they're like, wake up, what are you doing napping? You know, we're about to be fish food or whatever. And Jesus speaks to the wind and the waves and they calm. And then they get to the shore and scripture says that Jesus got out of the boat and entered the darkness. Mm-hmm. And where were all his followers?
Yeah.
They're still in the boat because they want to be comfortable and they want to be cozy mm-hmm. and they don't want to have to suffer anymore because they just went through the storm, but they saw the one who saved them from the storm. And yet they're still not willing to get out of the boat and go enter the darkness to help rescue a man who needs rescue. So I feel like that's such a picture of the lean that we can have as his followers to be like, you know, I'll stay in this boat, but like you go do your thing.
Yeah.
And I'll be here to applaud you when you bring this guy back in and he's one of our brothers.
No, I love the way you just told that story because I feel like, man, I'm in that boat all the time of like, I'm too tired to do one more thing. Like yeah. I see how bad this is about to be and I'm too tired. I think of just how many times I've shown up in my church and like had to clean human poop off the front door or there's garbage everywhere or we had a guy who was homeless come and smash our hose bib on the outside of our church building in the middle of our Christmas Eve service. So it's just a fountain of water squirting. I think of all the times where I've been so angry and so done and like I just want all these people to leave and not bother me anymore. And then God breaks through and I hear the story and I hear the gratefulness and I hear them saying like, listen, like, this is what we're fighting with. This is what we're trying for. And it breaks my heart. I think of there's so many moments where I'm so tired. It always reminds me of a story. I worked at a Salvation Army camp and I had no idea what I was doing. And I had kids that were really hard. And there was this kid and he just socially didn't fit in. And he was really violent and he bit me and he kicked me and cussed me out all the time. This week he was there. And the last night we were playing Two Truths and a Lie, and he told three of the biggest lies you ever heard in your life. And one of them was that his dad was on this like big aircraft carrier and it sank and only his dad survived. And he said that was true. And all the kids in the cabin are like, that's not true. That's a lie. And he's like, my dad told me that story. And then all the kids are like, well, if your dad told you that, he was lying. And then there was kind of this fight. So I had to sit outside of my cabin for the whole night. It was the last night of camp. And we put his bed on the porch of our cabin. And he was kind of a risk of running away. So literally, I spent the night standing up in the freezing cold with this one kid who was driving me crazy. I was so done with him. I was like, God, can tomorrow come so this kid could just go home? Like, I was so angry. Like, I was like those people in the boat. Like, God, I'm too tired. Like, I can't do this anymore. Mm-hmm. Like I tried to love this kid and I can't. And somewhere in the middle of the night, in the middle of praying and sleeplessness and everything else, like, God broke my heart. And I just started crying and praying. And the kid woke up the next day and him and I spent a lot of time together until the bus came for him. And I worked there for 4 summers and every year I saw him multiple times and every year he gave me a hug and like this beautiful relationship kind of bloomed out of that. And he wrote me letters and, mm-hmm. and this kid who literally, I was those disciples on the boat feeling like I am done. I'm pretty sure that's as close as I can come to hating somebody. And I was desperate and I was tired and all of a sudden God broke through and everything changed. And so I think it's just, how do we keep putting ourselves in that place?
Yeah.
How do we not stay on the boat? How do we say, I'm scared to death and I'm tired and I'm angry and I don't know how to love someone I hate and I don't know how to keep trying to love and have a relationship with someone who, you know, I don't know how to do this. I don't know how to move forward. I don't have imagination. I feel like I'm losing hope. So I don't have the courage to keep on with the radical love of Jesus. But how do we say, but I'm not going to back down. I'm going to keep showing. And that's why I love the picture of the dawn too, because the dawn comes no matter what. Mm. Like the light breaks through in the morning, no matter what, no matter how bad the night is, no matter how cold, no matter what, the dawn breaks through, and it breaks through everywhere on everyone. Doesn't it? Like the dawn doesn't come for some people. Like it comes as the horizon break, like it comes to everyone and everywhere. And I think that, how do I keep sitting in those places that are uncomfortable and difficult? And how do I hold on to hope that no matter how tired I am, no matter how I don't have imagination for how this could get better, I don't know what it looks like for God to be with us in this or with that person. How do I keep trying to find the courage to be in that space and allow God to change me and transform me, and for me to be awakening that, no, God is with us, and us includes these people around me, my enemies and the ones I love and my neighbors and everyone. Mm-hmm.
How do you see, or what are some of the most beautiful examples that you can think of where you've seen Jesus's people live out Jesus's way of being with people?
Hmm. One of my favorite stories, actually, a few years ago, there was someone in our neighborhood who got attacked. There was a guy who was high on drugs on the trail, and there was a mom who was home with her little baby daughter. It was late at night, and the kid knocked on the door and attacked her. And so as a church, we were praying, like, how do we respond? Like, this is this really traumatic, hard thing that's happened. And we're a real small church with small resources. But we're like, well, let's take up a collection. And then we had some people at our church who lived a few blocks away from her. And let's maybe just drop off flowers and just say, we're praying for you and we're with you. And if you need anything, here's our information. Like, and then someone stood up and said, well, what about the family of the boy who attacked her? And this really beautiful shift happened, and our whole church was like, yeah, what about his family? So we took our collection and we divided it in half. And half went to the woman who was attacked, and she got some flowers and some people visit her. And the other half, a couple at our church, Sam and Sue, they took the flowers and they did some investigating work, and they found who the parents were of the boy who was now in jail. And they went to them with these flowers and they said, we're praying for you and we're with you. And they said the same essential message, like, we care about you. Like, what can we do? And so, and they continued that relationship for a long time. And so we were actually, the interesting thing is that really their relationship and our church's relationship developed a lot more with the family, with his family, than with the woman who'd been attacked. Because I think for them, it was a really surprising thing of here are people coming to love us when everyone else seems to be angry at us and judging us and hating us. Mm-hmm. To me, that's a really, really beautiful picture. Mm. That every time I think of it, it just really, really strikes me.
Wow. It's so unexpected.
Yeah.
I'm sure it was the last thing they expected to show up at their door.
And you know, like, as a pastor standing in front of a church being like, all right, let's do something, it was the last thing I expected to. I mean, it's not like it was my idea at all.
Right.
I was more, oh, here's someone who's had this hard experience. How do we respond in love to that? And I love that we as a community are trying to be grounded enough in the idea of loving our enemies that someone had that immediate reaction of like, no, for us to follow Jesus means for us to care for this other family too in some way.
Yeah, the whole idea of God is with you too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It almost feels like we have sort of like, God is with you and God is with you. Sure, God is with you.
I don't know about you.
Yeah. But to have this sort of radical shift and use your voice and your life and your presence to say, God is with you, you know?
Yeah.
That his redemption and light are possible for you too. Mm-hmm. Is a beautiful thing. Mm-hmm. That's really cool that you said that. Man, I need to come to your church. You got a lot to share there, Kurt Ingram.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for hanging out with me today. Yeah. It was really fun, and I know it was a challenge, and also what a good word that we're called to be the light in the darkness, to to be the people who break forth that light, that God could use us. God's in the business of wanting to shine light into the darkness, but he wants to use us to do it. And I think that's a challenge and a good one as we talk about this God with us. This comes into the year. So thank you for being with us. Yeah. You guys, thank you for being with us. To keep up with us, you can find us on Instagram at we.collide and on Facebook at collide. And you can visit our website at wecollide.net if you want to find out about our events or our counseling program or our mentoring program or check out our resources. And I hope that this next week you sense that God is with you and that you share that message with all those that you collide with. Merry Christmas, and we'll catch you next week.
Merry Christmas.